good evening, friend. Your name somehow I can't recall right now, but know you all I bow. Good evening, friend. I know you all I do. Good evening, friend. Pull up the chair and turn the lights down low. You read ourselves at home. Good evening, friend. We're on the air just once a week, you know. Each week a brand new show for you, my friend. The music starts, the curtain parts. An hour of fun for everyone. Although it's true that I cannot see you, I almost feel I do. Good evening, friend.
Thank you, folks, thank you. Here it is Saturday night again, and it's a pleasure to welcome you to Shell Chateau once more. And I know you're going to enjoy yourself, because tonight we have another great show. For music, we have Victor Young and his orchestra. Come here, Victor. Come here, Victor. A little hand for her, folks. Well, folks, this is a little surprise. Today is Victor's birthday. And I want to tell you, Victor, you've been very nice to me, and I'm going to show my appreciation. I have a little birthday present for you. Here's a check, Victor, for $1,000. And if you're a nice boy next year, I'll sign it. For comedy, we have one of the funniest acts that ever appeared on the vaudeville stage. The Watson sisters. Come in, girls. Kitty Watson here is the little one, and Fanny is the big one. And I want to tell you, Fanny weighs 280 pounds, but every pound is love. You know, folks, the last few months, don't laugh yet. The last few months, Fanny's got an idea she wants to get in society. In fact, just this morning, she told me she's taking up horseback riding. She thinks it'll increase her social standing. Well, Fanny, I don't know about the social part of it, but I know it'll certainly increase your standing, all right. And for songs, we have that great dramatic singer, Miss Carmel Myers. Come over here, Carmel. I want to tell him, Carmel, how nice you are. Isn't she sweet, ladies and gentlemen? Well, to give you an idea how sweet Carmel is, a few minutes ago, Victor Young walked up to her and gave her a box of chocolate. And you should have heard the gallant speech Victor made, like a lovesick herring calling to its mate. He said, Miss Myers, here's a box of chocolate for you. You know the old saying, sweet bitter sweet. And Carmel turned around and said, thanks, Victor, have some nuts. But Grandma, ladies and gentlemen, we have Mr. Lionel Barrymore. Of course, it's needless to tell you that Mr. Barrymore is one of the two greatest dramatic stars in show business today. And believe me, you're lucky to have both of us on the same program. But now, Lee, we have Vince Barnett, one of the screen's spookiest comedians. Right this way, Vince, the old boy, right this way. Folks, to give you an idea of what a goofy guy this Vince Barnett is, he came to Shell Chateau late today. Naturally, I asked him what the trouble was. He said, Al, you see, it was this way. My car broke down, and a man charged me $50 to tow it in. I said, what, $50 to tow your car in? Isn't that an awful lot of money? He said, yeah, I know it is. But don't worry, Al. I made that guy earn it. I kept my brakes on all the time. Ladies and gentlemen, I know you'll all remember the distinguished guest we had here in Shell Chateau last week. Mr. Irvin S. Cobb from Paducah, Kentucky, sir. We received a great many letters from Kentuckians telling us how happy they were that Irvin Cobb had been with us in Shell Chateau. Of course, I'd like to answer each and every one of those letters personally. Honestly, I would. But I just haven't got the time. So the best way I can do, well, is by saying to all you Kentuckians who are listening in, hello, Tucky. Tucky, hello. Like all Kentucky boys, long for city joys, I left the farm and started to roam. Like all Kentucky boys, sick of all city noise, I heard Kentucky calling me home. Any thrill you get when you are leaving doesn't catch the thrill when you return. You'll say, hello, Kentucky. Kentucky, hello. Hello, Kentucky. Why did I go? What I've been through to get to you, Now I found you. Let me put my arms around you. Shady bowers, valleys and hills, pretty flowers, nothing but thrills. I'm glad I went astray to get that kick of pain. Hello, doggy, hello. Hello, doggy, doggy, hello. Hello, doggy, why did I go? What I've been through to get to you. Now I found you. Let me put my arms around you. Shady bowers, valleys and hills, glorious flowers, nothing but thrills. I'm glad I went a-praying to get that kick of pain. Hello, turkey, hello. Ladies and gentlemen, our first guest in Shell Chateau tonight is the foremost living representative of a very strange profession. His name is Vince Barnett, and he is without a doubt the world's greatest ribber. A ribber is a man who pulls a rib. And a rib, in case you don't know it, is a peculiar kind of a practical joke. Maybe you won't believe this, but for years, Vince has made a living by going around making people mad. For instance, he goes to a banquet made up as a head waiter, but he always says the wrong things to the wrong people. So inside of 5 minutes, half the people at the banquet feel sorry for him, and the other half want to punch him in the nose. Ladies and gentlemen, the world champion ribber, Vince Barnett.
Hello, Al, old boy. You certainly look great.
Wait a minute, Vince. Don't start ribbing me. What I'm interested in is, how did you happen to get in his ribbing business anyway?
Oh, that's easy, Al. You see, my father did the same thing for years, and he taught the game to me.
I see. Old man Ribber. Did your father invent the head waiter gag too, Vince?
Yeah, he used to use me as a busboy.
Your father a waiter and you a busboy. What banquet they must have been. I'm glad I wasn't there to eat any of that stuff.
Well, you see, along toward the end of the meal, when things were getting quiet, the chairman was getting up to speak, I'd come running out of the kitchen and holler at Dad.
Oh, your dad was the head waiter, huh?
Yeah, and then he'd holler back, and pretty soon you couldn't hear anything but the two of us arguing about where to put the coffee. Al, it was pandemonium.
Pandemonium? That's a pretty fancy word for a busboy, isn't it?
Say, I know a lot of fancy words.
Yeah? Well, let me hear you spell pandemonium.
So it was a riot. Anyhow, I'm an actor now, Al.
That's what you think.
Now, Al.
All right. I'm not going to do any ribbing. Boy, how bad do you to drive those banquet guys crazy? Tell me, Vince, do you still do that head waiter act?
Not so much now, Al. Now I generally pose as an expert. I'll never forget the rib I pulled in Hollywood when the picture industry was just beginning to go in for sound.
I remember all talking, all dancing, all singing, and all terrible. Go right ahead, Vince.
Well, I went over to one of the big studios and was introduced as Dr. Hoffman, a big German sound expert.
Dr. Hoffman?
Yeah, you see, I used to work with a dialect. Well, they had all the big shots there when I arrived. Production chiefs, directors...
Go on, Vince, don't stop. It's interesting.
You see, they gave me a big reception. Mm-hmm. We talked for a minute, and then I looked out the window and saw the new sound stages they were putting up. I said, gentlemen, what are these buildings here? The head man looked out the window and said very proudly, why, Dr. Hoffman, those are the new sound stages. We've already put $280,000 into it.
$280,000?
Go on, Vince, go on.
I said, sound stages is not necessary.
$280,000. You are fools.
I said, gentlemen, today is Thursday. By Saturday, I want all these buildings off the lot.
Listen, you don't mean to tell me that those cuckoos fell for that, do you?
Hook, line, and sinker, Al. I bawled them out for hours, and they were just about to put a wrecking crew on the sound stages when I broke down and told them it was just a gag.
Oh, but wait a minute. What I don't understand is why you didn't get a punch in the nose. Don't you get socked often, you know, for telling those kind of gags and doing those things?
No, Al. The funniest thing is I've only actually been hit once.
That's funny. Who did it?
Amundsen, the explorer.
Amundsen, the explorer? You don't mean to tell me you ribbed him, too?
Yep. It was at a banquet to raise money for an expedition. And I got up and denounced Amundsen as a fake and said he ought to be in Leavenworth with Dr. Cook.
Oh, say, no wonder he poked you. I'd have poked you myself.
You should have seen it, Al. Amundsen was a fine old gent, about 65. He got up and apologized for the accident, was about to occur, and then he smacked me right in the kisser. But the funny thing about it was, when he found out it was a rib, he laughed harder than anybody else. He was a swell guy.
You mean he forgave you?
Yep. As a matter of fact, everybody I've ever ribbed in my life, Al, has become my friend ever.
Listen, Vince, I happened to be in Hollywood a year or so ago when you pulled that famous rib on Max Bear, the shrinking violet of the ring. What did you do to rib Max?
Well, I ribbed him for weeks when he was out here making a picture with Primo Canera, and Canera was champion. Remember when Canera was champion?
Canera? Oh, yeah, he was a boxer, wasn't he, or something?
Well, one night Max and I had dinner at my house, and afterward Max sat down in the living room with a drink in his hand. My radio was playing, and you know what I did?
No.
I sneaked out on the porch with a microphone.
A microphone?
Yeah, you see, I had it connected with a radio so I could cut in and sound like I was on the air. So I stood out there and said,
"Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program at this time to give you a few late news flashes.
Now I know what's wrong with you, Vince."
"What's that, Al?"
"At heart, you're just a radio announcer."
"I resent that." "Well, anyway, I gave a couple of legitimate news flashes that I got out of the evening papers, and then I said, Hollywood, California, this afternoon on the set of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, where the great Primo Canera is playing the lead in a picture in which Max Baer has a small part, there was lots of excitement. Max has been trying to hit Canera for 3 weeks unsuccessfully. But this afternoon, Canera accidentally let one go that caught Baer on the jaw, knocked him out for 15 minutes. Managers of these fighters and studio officials are trying to keep this out of the paper. But this station believes that the public should know the truth about such synthetic chorus boy price fighters as Max Baer."
Boy, I'll bet Max was burning.
Was he burning? He rushed over the radio, took one punch at it, and smashed it to pieces. The next day, he was still sore. He was pacing up and down at the studio, waiting for Canera to show up. Al, I tell you, he'd have killed that guy.
Oh, say, you're lucky you're alive to tell about it. But wait a minute, Vince. I want to explain one thing to the folks here. Ladies and gentlemen, Vince is not only a great ripper, but he's a very fine actor, too. Vince, only last week, I saw you in that new Warner Brothers picture, Don't Bet on Blondes. And honestly, and sincerely, I thought you were swell.
Gee, thanks, Al. By the way, I thought you were great and go into your dance.
Thank you, Mr. Barnett.
But tell me, Al, who was that girl that played opposite you in that picture? She was terrible.
Wait a minute. Now, just a minute. Now, wait a minute. By the way, do you know who that girl was?
No, I don't know who she was.
Well, listen to me a minute, Vince Barnett. I'll tell you a few things. In the first place, that girl was Ruby Keeler. In the second place, Ruby Keeler happened to be my wife. In the third place, she was great in that picture. And in the fourth place, you say you've only been shot once?
That's right.
Well, you've been wrong all day. Well, folks, we're back in Shelterville. And you know those two kids that work here, Jack Stanton and Peggy Gardner? Well, I gave them a little vacation last week. They went down to Catalina for the weekend. And those kids had a great time, but they got a terrible sunburn. When they got back to work this morning, I heard Jack say to Peggy, "Gee, honey, you're peeling." And she said, "Thanks, Jack. You were peeling me, too. Now, if that isn't love, it's the worst joke I ever told." Anyhow, now they're going to sing for us that lovely Rodgers and Hart song, My Heart Stood Still. Jack Stanton and Peggy Gardner.
I loved a sweetheart I met at school. All in this sweetheart seemed romantic cool.
Oh, how can I stop what my heart so made? I saw your eyes, now cackles rise in vain.
I took one look at you, that's all I meant to do, and then my heart stood.
I beat the step and walk, my lips could move and talk, and yet my heart stood still. Though not a single word was spoken, I could I never knew that was
next guest this evening is a very talented and charming young lady whom you've truly heard on the air many times. But the first time I heard her wasn't on the air. No, sir. She was over the back fence. Well, you see, she lived next door to me. And I used to hear her singing. I enjoyed it so much. I always wanted to meet her. Well, I've met her. She's here. Her name is Carmel Myers. And it's a pleasure to welcome her to Shell Chateau tonight, where she will present another of her radio song dramas, Miss Carmel Myers. Time. The spring of the year 1912. Scene. A nightclub in the gayest, most romantic city in the world, Paris! Paris!
Thank you. Oh, thank you so much. You know, when first I came to Paris from America, they used to say that the secret of my success was that I brought Broadway to Paris. And now tomorrow, when I go aboard the boat, they will take me back to my own country. My great regret is that I cannot take you, who are my Paris, back with me to Broadway. And now for my last song, until I return. To ask me, look into my eyes. Do I love you? Does somebody in the rose love sunrise? Does the robin in red love the springtime? Does the violet love April sky? And you ask me, my dear, if I love you, when there's nothing but love.
Before me. I'll be down in 3 minutes. The boat train leaves in a half an hour, you know. Come on, Simone, I'll go. You finish with the bag. You. What brings you here?
To the question. Money, of course.
Well, you're not going to get any, Jacques. Not a penny, do you understand? You needn't try to set me. It doesn't strike me in the least. There was a time before I was sure of my success, and I might have cared whether you talked or not. Now go on, talk. Shout. Shout from the housetop. Tell everyone you know. I won't pay for your silence. Oh, wait. Let go of me. You're drunk. Drunk, that's what you are. Let go of me, I say. Oh, you're hurting me. Wait a minute, Jack. I'll give you anything. Anything, only. Yes. I think I've got that much. Right there in that drawer. Let me go and I'll get it for you. Oh, better. Here it is. Only this time it isn't gold, it's lead. Simone, the black lace with the net. Will you stop fidgeting? What have you got to be nervous about? If you keep on behaving this way after we get to New York, send you right back to Paris. That's what I'll do. We've been out 4 days now, haven't we? I'd have killed him. We'd have heard about it by now. See, the only reason is good news. Oh, thank you. Then there'd be nothing between me and success. That's all that counts. Never mind. Tonight at the ship's concert, I'll be a sensation. You'll see. the director of the opera is in the audience. It's my great opportunity. See how silly you are. You're quite safe. See who that is, really. Good evening, Persa. Have you come to take me to the concert? I'm ready. Yes. Yes, of course I can spare you a few moments. Won't you come in? Oh, that's quite all right. I'll call you when I need you, sir. Now then. Oh, Violet. From whom? Yes, I'd be glad to read it. I see. It's a ridiculous idea, isn't it? It's so like the French police. They're so excitable. Yes, I see. They say he was found in my apartment, but surely you don't for a moment believe. No, I understand. Naturally, you wouldn't want a scandal on your boat. Why, yes, of course. I'd be glad to see the captain. Only you see, the concert's on now, and I'm supposed to sing in 5 minutes. Don't you think we'd better wait until after the concert's over? It might create even more talk if I didn't appear. And after all, it isn't as though I could get overboard and swim ashore. Excuse me. Immediately after the concert, on the bridge. Thank you. Thank you, and believe me, I don't want a scandal any more than you do. Au revoir. I hope you like my song. Come in, Simone. Pull yourself together. We still have a chance to beat them. It depends on us. But I must look my best. Hurry. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to be here tonight and to be part of the first concert aboard this beautiful ship. I'd like to sing a song for you that Miss Fritzi Chef is making popular.
Sweet summer breeze, whispering trees, sunshine softly above. Roses in bloom, wafted perfume, sleepy birds.
Folks, we're back in Chicago, and the show is going on. Tonight, we're presenting Lionel Barrymore, Carmel Myers, Vince Burnett, the Watson Sisters, and Victor Young in music. And now, I'm going to sing a song for you. But before Victor plays it for me, I want to tell you something about him. Victor is keeping company with a girl. The other night, she invited him over to her house. The minute Victor got inside the door, her mother hit him over the head with a broom, her father kicked him down the stairs, and her kid brother threw stones at him. Well, folks, Victor isn't going to call on that girl anymore. There's one thing about Victor, he can certainly take a hint. And now, I would like to sing a song that an old lady and an old gentleman happened to be sitting here tonight have asked me to sing. It's a great song. In fact, I think it's the finest song Irving Berlin has ever written. When I Leave the World Behind.
Oh, millionaire who's burdened down with care. A load is on his mind. He's thinking of the day when he must pass away and leave his wealth behind. I haven't any gold to leave when I grow old. Somehow it passed me by. I'm very poor, but still, I'd leave a precious will when I must say goodbye. I'd leave the sunshine to the flowers. I'd leave the springtime to the trees, and to the old folks, I leave the memory of a baby upon their knees. I leave the nighttime to the dreamer. I leave the songbird to the blind. I leave the moon above, falls in love when I leave the world behind. When I leave the world behind, I leave the sunshine to the flowers. I leave the springtime to the trees, and to the old folks, I leave memories of a baby on their knees. I leave the nighttime to the dreamers. I leave the songbird to the blind. I leave the moon above, suppose in love, when I leave the world behind. When I leave the world behind. Probably know them too, those famous Baldwin headliners, the Watson sisters. As I said to you before, Kitty Watson is small and cute, and Fanny Watson, well, she's more the comfortable type. In fact, Fanny is big enough to sell pianos and carry her own samples. Meow. It's great to have them here in Chalcedo tonight, and here they are, the Watson sisters.
Oh, tell me, Kitty. Now, don't you know you can't come into a studio late?
Yeah, I know, Kitty, but just before I came into the studio, I met an old sweetheart of mine.
An old sweetheart?
Yeah, and you know, he was so excited and so glad to see me, he squoze my hand.
He what?
Oh, he squoze my hand.
What, Fanny, you mean he squeezed your hand?
Don't tell me, Kitty, I was right there and he squoze my hand.
Well, how do you mean he squoze your hand?
Well, did you ever read biblical history?
What has biblical history got to do with he squoze your hand?
Well, isn't there a passage in the Bible which reads, arise, arose, and arisen?
Yes.
Well, then what's the matter with squeeze? He's frozen, prison. Oh, Kitty, isn't it grand to be back here in sunny California?
I'll say it is.
You know, it takes me right back to my childhood days.
Your childhood days?
Some memories.
I can remember. I get it. Oh, you mean back on the farm?
Yes, the good old farm with all the mortgages hanging on it.
Fanny, remember when Pa decided to auction off the farm and move to the city?
Kitty, I'll never forget that first day at the auction sale.
Why?
Pa said, first I want to get rid of a big horse.
And they grabbed you.
Yeah, they grabbed me. No, they didn't. That was the other horse. You got me all. I don't know what I am here.
Oh, Fanny, remember all those chickens we had on the farm?
Oh, I'll say I do. We had 1,000 hens and 1 rooster.
1 rooster?
Oh,
well, what did he do?
He was the bookkeeper.
Oh, Fanny. And remember when we grew older,
yeah,
he used to put out on plays.
Yeah, I remember that first play we put on called The Road to Ruin.
Oh, yes, The Road to Ruin. Now, I don't remember. What part did you play?
Yeah, I was the detour.
Oh, the detour. Yeah. And then we started going out with fellows.
Yeah, depending on the weather.
Oh, Manny, what weather?
Whether they take me or not.
Oh, Manny, I remember your fellow.
Oh, you mean Crumble Poke?
Yes. Manny, when you went out with your fellow, did he used to hold his hand?
Well, the first time, you bet your life I did. Yeah, I don't think men can be trusted.
Well, I don't agree with you.
You don't.
No, I was in one of those automatic restaurants today.
Yes.
Where you drop in a nickel and get a cup of coffee.
That's right.
You drop in a nickel and get a piece of pie.
What a marvel.
You know, Manny,
what?
I was just thinking, wouldn't it be wonderful if you could drop in a nickel and get a husband?
Yeah. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could drop in your husband and get a nickel? Oh, how kitty. But you know not a nice boyfriend. Can't you introduce me to one who wants to pet just a little?
Manny, if you want a boyfriend, you'll have to reduce.
Oh, is that so? How'd you like to know that I have a boyfriend?
No.
Yeah. And last night he kissed me.
He kissed you?
Yeah.
For the first time.
And Kitty, do you know I don't know what to think about it?
Why?
Well, when I said I kissed him, he said, Manny, if your kiss is as good as I've ever had, said, I'll send you a $5,000 car.
$5,000 car?
And he said, if your kiss is the best kiss that I've ever had, he said, I'll send you a $10,000 car.
A $10,000? So what did he send you?
A bicycle.
Oh, Manny. Manny, you simply must reduce.
Oh, don't be silly.
You should diet.
Well, for instance.
You should exercise.
Well, I'll tell you.
You should ride a horse.
Well, I'll tell you what. You should live so long. Ride a horse. Now, wait a minute. Didn't I do horseback riding while we were over in England?
Oh, in dear old London. Remember the fox hunt? Galloping across country astride a noble steed.
Yeah.
Manny, will you ever forget those horseback rides?
I never sit down a minute without thinking of
them. Yes, that reminds me.
What?
During the fox hunt, at that last high jump, lady somersault missed you. Where were you?
I haven't come down yet. Did I have trouble at that last ditch?
Well, didn't they tell you what to do when you came to a ditch?
Yeah, they told me to take it.
Did you take it?
About a pint and a half of it. And then someone yelled to me, follow the fence, follow the fence.
What did you say?
I said, follow it yourself. I got enough to last me for a month.
Oh, Manny, but with all your blunders, I thought the ocean voyage was beautiful.
Oh, Kitty, don't mention that ocean trip to me again.
Why? Mm-hmm. Well, the only trouble with you is you're a poor sailor.
You're telling me.
Yes.
Kitty, was I seasick?
No.
I even look like my passport picture. Not only did I have seasickness, but I had lockjaw at the same time.
Oh, dear. Dear me, the way you deported yourself on the book was terrible.
What do you mean, terrible?
On our first day out, when the captain came out on deck and was looking around, you asked him what he was looking for.
Well, what's there in there?
And when he said he was looking for his first mate, what did you say?
I don't know. What did I say?
You said, oh, Captain, this is so sudden.
Did I say that?
Yeah, I was a steward announced something was being served in the salon.
In what?
In the salon. You started to run. What are you running for?
Oh, I thought he said saloon. Yes, and when they did serve luncheon at our table, do you remember they only served one chicken for 12 people?
Yes, I do remember that. And the way people were grabbing right and left, oh, it was terrible.
Wasn't it disgusting?
Awful.
But the two legs I got were all right.
Poor Fanny.
Yeah, you get out of here. That's what
If there's one family name in America which stands for genius in acting, it is the name of Barrymore. It is a great tradition that has lasted more than one generation and is still continuing. Several weeks ago, we had with us here in Shelter Grove one member of this family, Mr. John Barrymore. Tonight, we are proud to present another, John Barrymore's brother, Lionel. I do not need to tell you of Lionel Barrymore's countless successes. There's probably not one of you here this evening who has not seen or heard him. Tonight, he will appear in a scene from one of his greatest stage successes, Augustus Thomas Slade, the Copperhead. It is a pleasure to welcome to Shell Chateau, Mr. Lionel Barrymore. The Copperhead is a story of Milt Shanks, an Illinois farmer who was despised by his neighbors as a coward during the war years of the 1860s. They never suspected he was greater, a hero, than any of them. They called Milt the Copperhead because that was a popular name in the North for the Northerners who sympathized with the Southern side. His wife died of a broken heart after his son was killed with the Union forces at Vicksburg, but Milt never told his secret. 40 years later, when Milt Shanks' grave had nearly been forgotten, it had suddenly revived again. Milt's granddaughter, Madeline, the apple of his eye, is applying for position of school teacher in the town. Her chief rival is the daughter of Newt Gillespie, a Union veteran. And the old feud is fanned to flame again. Not only this, but the revelation of Milt's past threatens to break up Madeline's romance with a young lawyer whom she loves. So Milt decides to break his 40 years of silence and summons to the parlor of his home two men who have not spoken to him in 40 years. One of them is Newt Gillespie, the other is Colonel Hardy, mayor of the town. But they have not arrived yet. Just now, the parlor is occupied only by Madeline and her sweetheart, Philip Manning.
Madeline, you mustn't worry about this business. It simply has nothing to do with us.
But it has. You've got to think of your career.
But, darling, how can you hurt my career?
I'm the granddaughter of a copperhead. How do you think the voters will like that?
I don't care. I'm going to marry you, copperhead or no copperhead. Because I love you.
You are sweet, Philip, but I don't know.
Here comes Duke Gillespie with Colonel Hardy.
Oh, I wish I knew what Grandpa's up to.
Oh, good afternoon, Madeline.
Good afternoon.
How are you, Philip?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Well, come. I haven't set foot in this house for 40 years.
No, neither have I, Newt.
I don't know what Milt Shanks has got up his sleeve, but I do know this. The school board votes tonight for a new teacher. My daughter has earned the place by years of paperwork, and she's substituted satisfactory in this job. The old settlers here ain't going to be patient with no move to outflank her. And putting in a copperhead granddaughter.
Now, just a minute, Gillespie.
Oh, please, Philip. Here's Grandpa.
Good afternoon, folks. You sent for me, Mr. Shanks?
I did, Colonel Hardy.
You sent for me, too.
I did, Gillespie.
Well, what do you want?
Sit down and you'll see. Sit down.
Madeline. All right.
Sit down by Philip, will you? A short horse is soon curried, and my business won't keep anyone long. Oh, are you all seated? Colonel Hardy and me was boys together. Our congressman gave me an appointment to West Point, but Tom Hardy had to have it. Besides, it wasn't convenient for me to go to West Point just then. So I resigned it for him. Before that, we went to a school where Abe Lincoln come and talked to us. We both know him from that time on till he was elected president. Ain't that so, Colonel Hodges?
Yes, never mind that. If you've got anything to say, say it.
Just a minute, Gillespie. Just a minute. See that mask of Lincoln on the mantelpiece? Lincoln. Hardy and me was together at his house before he started for Washington. A sculpture man was there to take a plaster Paris model of Lincoln's face. Most folks think this is an after-death thing, a death mask. But Colonel Hardy and me saw Chuck just throw the soft plaster on his face and let it get hard. Lincoln sitting in an armchair, like you are. Madeline, hand me that box, will you, dear? Thank you, child. In this box, where I have my letters and keepsake, is a model of Lincoln's hand. The hand that wrote the Emancipation of Slavery. The sculpture man sent me these himself, so they're genuine. Look at my hand beside his. Bigger man, every way. All the statues of Lincoln nowadays is copied from this. So, you see, we know them. Well, then the war broke out. Hardy took a vow to support his country. I took one to destroy it. Hardy's company marched off. My Joey, only 16, along with him. His mother, Linda Ginn the Saint. And the women, and... That's his picture there, Philip, over the mantelpiece. You was probably thinner at 16 yourself.
Yes, I was.
I was peeking through some bushes. Could almost catch them as they marched by. Blue eyes. His mother never said a word. Cried quite well. Well, us knights of the Golden Circle.
Copperhead?
Golden Circle? We sent help to the south. All cousins, we pies and petrol. I went to Richmond, Virginia, twice. Time went on, and Vicksburg come. And one night a fella come into town here and hitched. When'd you hear from Jones, says he, your boy? Last week, I said. How was he? Says he. All right, I said. And he says, Joe's dead. Madeline, I can see your grandma yet, the crying by the well, the petting the corner where Joe sat the day he marched away. By and by, I leaned over to touch her, but she thawed away, trembling and saying, for heaven's sake, Milkshanks, you're unclean. His mother. 2 or 3 days she was pining, her face against some letters he'd wrote home. And then, the two, her and Joey, was buried the same time. At the church, instead of the trouble I expected from the neighbors, they was all strange-like and kind. Except when I went to look in the black coffin, under the flag where Joey was. Luke Gillespie tucked me by the arm and said, well, you tell him, Luke, what you said.
I have told him more than once.
Well, tell her. She never heard you.
I give him my word before he dies.
His word to Joey.
Yes. He said, if you take me back, don't let him see me. If he'd only fought on the other side, I'd have been proud. Even if he'd been the one that shot me. But no copperhead. And I did. Right in the church, I just took him by the arm and said it was his particular last request. Quiet like, as I'm talking now. And led him out of the church. And I'd do it again.
Oh, Grandpa.
That left only little Elsie, your ma, Madeline. And she was so little I couldn't leave her alone. And I was carrying her on my arm. Newt Gillespie was the only man that spoke to me. And in the whole United States. Yes, in the whole world. Only one man wrote to me. I kept his letter, naturally. Here it is. I'm going to ask Colonel Hardy to read it.
What's this?
Careful, Colonel. It's a keepsake with me.
Oh, all right.
And then when you have read it, that's all I got to say. If it wasn't for Madeleine and Philip, and I know they're loving each other and separating...
Hey, heavens, man, why, who's crazy? You or I?
Well, Milkshanks.
Read it.
Milkshanks.
What is it, Colonel?
Read it, Colonel Hardy.
Why? Executive Mansion, Washington. April 11th, 1865. Mr. Milton Shanks, Milton. Dear Milt, please surrender ends it all. I cannot think of you without a sense of guilt. But it had to be. I alone know what you did, and even more what you endured. I cannot reward you. Man cannot reward anything worthwhile. There's only one who can. I send you this flag handkerchief.
This is it.
It's not new, but you'll prize it the more for that. I hope to shake your hand sometime. Your friend, Abraham.
Hang on. Do you recollect the time you drove me to the train in March of 61?
very well. You went to look at cattle.
That's what I told you. I was called to Washington by Lincoln. And 2 days later, at night, in his library, White House, he walked over toward the window, and without turning around, he says, "Nope." I remember a clock ticking on the mantel. I says, "Mr. President, Milt, how much do you love your country?" "Well, I calculate I'd die for it," I says. "Thousands of boys is crying to do that." Then he turned round. "Would you give up something more in life?" "Prime Minister," says. The president put his hands to his hair. Went on. "It means to be odious in the eyes of men and women. Eat your heart out, alone, or you can't tell your wife, her child, her friend." "Go on," I said. "The Southern sympathizers is organizing in our state really worse than the soldiers. I want you to join them Knights of the Golden Circle. To be one of them, a copperhead, their leader, if you can. I need you, Milt. Your country needs you." Hadn't been 2 minutes since he was laughing. But he lifted his hand, and it seemed we were the only folk in the world. "I'll do what I say." He took a little flag out of his pocket, like as not this very one, and put it on the table, like I am putting it. "As chief magistrate of the nation, I muster you into the nation's service," he said. He took my hand and laid it where the blue is, and all the star, and put his hand over mine, only open the door, and said, "Nothing. Just look in my eyes. And look." Well, I dine. What you folks call copperheads. Knights of the Golden Circle. It was terrible when I couldn't tell the boy. When he marched off. 16, you know. Blue eyes.
Grandpa.
He ruined the governor that pardoned me out of Joliet where I was convicted to. But I always figured he had his orders from Washington, same as me, and couldn't talk about it. And even when Vicksburg come and Joe was dead, why, the war wasn't over.
Oh, confounded Milton, in all these years we've despised you. Why haven't you told?
Told. Couldn't tell George or his mother. And with them gone, everything else seems so useless. It's only now when it's separating Madeleine and Philip and filing an election to the school board.
Her election? Well, doggone it, Milt. That story would elect a wooden Indian.
Come here, Milt.
Milt, what are you trying to do?
Take that coat off, Milt. This coat I'm wearing don't belong to me.
I knew it's not your Grand Army coat.
Here, get in it. And here's the hat. There. And bring him to that meeting tonight. I may be a darn fool, but by gosh, I ain't no scout.
Oh, Grandpa.
The blue medal
on, Milt.
And the cord around it. If there was only a looking glass.
Oh.
Is it all right now for me to wear this?
Well, I'm certain if I knew who's got a better idea.
Come.
My Lord, it's wonderful to have friends again.
Thank you. Now about a common family problem and an easy way to solve it.
Do you have a family rule to use your legs more and the car less in order to save money on gasoline? And are you having a hard time doing it? Well, here's a way you can drive your car even more than you've been doing and still use up less gasoline. Simply get Super Shell, the new type gasoline that cuts down the usual waste on starting and accelerating, that saves on the stop-and-go driving we all do. Super Shell does this because it's a balanced gasoline. It's the first truly balanced gasoline. It's efficient for starting and accelerating as well as for long, steady driving. By using Super Shell, you can save as much as a cupful in just starting and warming up the engine a single time. And you can save up to another cupful on 10 minutes of rapid accelerating. In the course of a week's driving, the gasoline you save really amounts to something, because 80% of your driving is on short trips right around home. You're starting or accelerating practically all the time. Thousands and thousands have proved it's true. You spend less for gasoline when you use Super Shell. Try a tank full soon. You can get it at any of the 30,000 neighborly Shell stations from coast to coast.
And I hope, ladies and gentlemen, are all back in Shell Chateau next Saturday night. Because next week, we're going to have another great show. We're going to have Rascal Ace. You know, that stuttering comedian of pictures. We're going to have another Rascal. Rascal Turner, one of the greatest flyers in the United States, and the favorite to win the Thompson Trophy in the National Air Race at the end of this month. We're also going to have a little girl who will be famous someday, who's already a charming little singer and a great tap dancer. Her name is Marjorie Keeler. Maybe you've heard of her sister. I have. And last but not least, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have that brilliant and glamorous screen star, Miss Dolores Del Rio. What a show. So remember, it's a date next Saturday night. And don't forget, the next time you're out driving and you need gas, drop in at your nearest Shell service station. This is Al Jolson saying, from the bottom of my heart, thank you, Father. Thank you, Mother. Thank you, sisters, and the faithful for you, brother. Thank the family every Saturday night. Thank you kindly for the letters you write. This is Elsie, your palsy Weldy, and I want to promise you, Shell Chateau will bring you guest stars. We hope they'll be the best stars. And now I'll say good night to you.